ultimately, the practical implication of this is there's no censorship in Islam. Sharia does not censor anything. It accurately labels everything. It says this is not this.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Chai Pod, where we have conversations on the arts, culture, and society, much as you would if you were sipping some hot chai tea at the local cafe. I'm your host, Brother Dash, and in this, our second episode, we conclude our conversation on culture, identity, and Islam with Sheikh Abdullah Adhemi. Stay tuned for the Chai Pod.
Back to this, what the French calligrapher and the artist said. He said, beyond the inconceivable that it could have happened by military prowess, he said the Muslims were actually looking for the, and artists would appreciate this more than most people, were looking for the infinite horizons that the Quran foretold in its pages would be possible. That's what they went looking for. And it's in the Quran. He's absolutely correct. The Quran said, we will show you our signs in the horizons and within yourselves. These horizons of creativity and wonder and magic are infinite. Go out and look for them. Not go out and conquer people. Not go out and coerce people to follow your deen. This is a preposterous notion to attribute to the last messenger of God. Peace be upon him. Let's close that, because this is really priceless for an artist. And this is essentially a 3-minute encapsulation of all the parameters of creativity and aesthetics you would ever need under Sharia.
Okay.
When you're a poet, you are a person expressing feeling, shi'r, shu'ur, to feel. And also, the really wonderful thing about shi'r, poetry is two things. Poetry is to emanate light. The SH and the Ayn is about intelligence, is about emanating light, brilliance, radiation, shu'a, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the latter part is actually the negation of fear. What you emit, you radiate, you feel, you exude feeling in order to counter fear. Because the latter part of poetry, the word shi'r, is the ayn and the r sound, the apostrophe or the r sound. The r apostrophe sound is fear, terror.
Mm.
The latter part, the ultimate goal of poetry, is to bring solace, to negate fear, to negate anxiety, to bring solace. It's magnificent. When an artist is told, that's your job, man, go out and write like there's no tomorrow. He's not being, okay, don't be vulgar, son. No. Well, he already knows that. He already knows la ilaha illallah, there's no God. He already knows the basic parameters. Now, when he sings, what is he doing when he sings? Yughanni, ghina. The GH and the N root is seeking enrichment. Or bringing enrichment. You see the progression from the songwriter to the poet, the poet to the songwriter,
sure,
to the singer. The singer is enabling, bringing, exuding enrichment. So Sharia just tells you this is what a singer does. And so it leaves it to your human experience, to your lived reality, to tell you, if there's somebody banging a musical instrument on stage and screaming their head off and lighting their head on fire, is this person enabling enrichment? It's a rhetorical question. Sharia doesn't issue a judgment on this person. This person may need a friend. This person may need compassion. This person may need counseling or whatever in between. But it's not your job to offer him this unless you are earnestly concerned about his well-being. You see, that's the ethos here. It's not, oh, stuff for Allah. This is, you know, we seek refuge in God from this ignorance. And this is why I promised you I would connect the Meccan period to cultural creation and creativity. What the prophet, peace be upon him, was saying, may God have mercy upon Moses, he saw more than this, is practicing something Muslims only claim to be practicing, but are very far away from it. It's the notion of fana, the notion of self-annihilation, the notion of selflessness. And unfortunately, you know, this is like the truth hour or something now. You know, we have to say the truth, you know. This is part of...
That's
right. Absolutely. So we cannot, the Muslim, whether he's a creative being or otherwise, cannot live a presumptuous, arrogant pretense that his spiritual pursuit is actually a process of annihilation and selfless annihilation. Because does a person, does a Muslim, in a public lived experience today, whether they are in the United States or whether they are in Europe or anywhere else in the world, fana, or self-annihilation, or selflessness in the true sense, is actually having compassion for the person who disregards you, having compassion for a person who looks at you funny. And you know why? If you're an artist or you're a nutcase or whatever, you have a very interesting perspective on things. That's what Sharia enables you to have. That's what the Quran, it being a eternal song of quiet rebellion. How? When the Quran teaches you to look at a person who disregards you or even possibly abuses you today, in 21st century, in the 21st century world, post 9/11 world, the person, when you look at that person, you look at them as someone who is affected by a pervasive discourse that permeates every corner of the world, because there's a formidable media machine spreading a particular discourse. And that's why we had to ask the question earlier, how does a narrative that is authentic and established and affirmed by major national institutions and arbiters of culture, such as the institution, the Smithsonian, for example, become altered? When this alteration happens, it pervades all of society, the entire world. That person who mistreats a Muslim, or disregards a Muslim, or mocks the Prophet of Islam, peace be upon him, is someone who is acting based on the information that they are being fed. And the very song we quoted earlier, waiting for the world to change, you know, when they have the information, they can manipulate it however they want. It's not that the artist doesn't care, according to Mr. Mayer, it's just that the fight is unfair, right? Or something like that. I'm just pulling from this guy here. I'm not sure that that's how the lyrics go. But anyway, the Muslim looks at this and realizes something beautiful is on the horizon. When fraud is allowed to be so pervasive over the entire universe, there will be a countercurrent. When God wills, there are cosmic energies that have to be aligned, and at a moment of divine choosing, all these earthly forces will come together and establish a momentum that will be the upturn of all this pervasive fraud. And when that happens, the truth pervades every corner of the globe as well, just as the fraud pervaded every corner. But it has to be allowed to be prominent. It has to be allowed to be given all this press time and exposed and take its course and wreak havoc and do damage, so that ultimately, when the truth is allowed to shine and set you free, as you said, it'll have the same powerful reach and the endless reach, just as the fraud did prior to it going down. The last point we wanted to connect is this notion of how the selflessness, the fana, the notion of annihilating oneself. The F and the N in the Arabic language is about two things. Is about the capacity to express art. Fen is not only art, but also discipline. Discipline, craft. So an artist in the Quranic Arabic is someone who is a craftsman. When she expresses herself, she is coming from her ability to express herself as an artist comes from her capacity to negate herself. The N and the F. Fana. Negation. Self-negation enables artistic, creative endeavor. You create as if you do not exist. Finally, the notion, the F and the N, are related to something else, which is not only just negating yourself, negating or distinguishing or categorizing the various modalities or genres within which you work. So nafi in the Arabic language, the N, the F, and the Y, is to negate. So ultimately, the practical implication of this is there's no censorship in Islam. Sharia does not censor anything. It accurately labels everything. It says this is not this. Something is not. So, nafi. This is the la nafiya, for example. You know, the article of negation. Negation does not mean censorship. Negation means this is not something else. And this something else is not another thing. So you are enabled to label things properly, not to obliterate. Everything is in the open. This is a profoundly American ideal, if you think about it.
Yes, yes.
The freedom of expression, this is a Quranic ethos of the most profound eloquence, because it's true freedom of expression. It's not convenience. It's not fraud when convenient, truth when convenient, semi-truth. This is brutality. This is oppression. This is constriction that is begging. This is the R and the Q. This is servitude. This is bondage, begging the word "read" to free people from the shackles so that they can know everything, not half truths, not partial truths, but all of the truth. And this is profoundly empowering to an artist when he wishes to express an idea. These are the parameters of Sharia that he works within, because he became cognizant of what it is that Sharia wants from the artist when she creates her piece, whether it's poetry, whether it's sculpture, whether it's, you know, of course, with minor limitations on sculpture, which is another thing.
Sure.
But really, really, that's ultimately our discussions on culture and artistic expression revolve around the question of identity and how identity is shaped and what makes it unique. And the second question is these parameters that define creative expression for what it is, as opposed to limit the expression by saying do this and don't do that. Notice we did not say a single word about this is what you do, and you take in preferably landscape orientation is usually based on what? You know, we're not saying orient the page this way, use a 18x24 canvas. That's not how we roll, you know. It just doesn't work this way in Sharia. It's the basic parameters. One final point that I'd like to make on the identity issue here is also critical in our age for Americans and Muslims. And that is, the artist must realize that his focus in today's artistic environment must be on the bolstering of a sense of identity for her people, for her tribe, for her minor community, for her smaller community, as opposed to addressing everything for everyone. This is interesting. This requires more discussion by artists. Is what is the ultimate target here? Are we marketing to all of America? Are we targeting to just the Muslims? Are we this is something that obviously is beyond my competence, because this is some I can enable a discussion. I can moderate a discussion, but ultimately it has to be a communal process, and this is also part of the ethic of coming together and putting our collective brilliance together, not waiting for the sheikh or the imam to give a decree or an edict, because no such thing can exist about something so malleable, so dynamic, and so non-definitive as the creation of art and culture and folklore. The artist today, the Muslim, should focus on putting back that which was robbed by this fraud that we talked about. The purpose of fraud is to rob you from your sense of heritage, from your sense of folklore, from your sense of identity, so that you feel that you really don't come from anywhere. You're severed. You're alienated. You're disenfranchised. So the only other alternative is this monolithic presentation or lifestyle that the pursuit of which will consume your resources, will consume your soul, will consume everything else, but it's the enterprise. It's being, you know, you have to have the latest gadget and the latest, I honestly don't know what the latest gadget is right now, but, you know, the iPod is the last thing. And
well, the iPhone now.
The iPhone, and as a proud American, I declare that I have neither.
Okay.
iPod nor iPhone. This is really, truly, it's truly what it is to be an American, which is really a fascinating anomaly that perhaps is fodder for comedy. People who are much wittier than I can pursue something like this. The duality, for a teaching purpose, not just to mock, the duality of how our American ideals are about being a maverick and being a pioneer and swimming against the current and not being like everyone else, but everything in our real culture is about being like everyone else, and about consuming, so that we have these manuals of how to be cool and how to be semi-cool and how to be something else. And I'm really not up on these things anymore, but really, you know, where do you shop, what music you listen to, these are unwritten manuals that are teaching us this is how we express ourselves. And so the Muslim needs to focus not on that dimension of the cultural expression, but what do I do to ennoble my neighborhood, my community, my town? You know, set your sights on something small. What message can be ennobling? What message can bring solace to people? And take that. And that, focus on that. What message can connect people with their heritage? What message can remind people how their grandparents sang and danced and what kind of pottery they made? Nobody talks about that stuff anymore. And, you know, why don't we teach in Sira class, instead of teaching the miracles and the magical dimension of the Sira, which is far more dramatic, of course, you know, we shouldn't compete with special effects television. You know, this is not the purpose of teaching Sira. But how about the dimension of the Prophet, peace be upon him, assigning the women of the Ansar, the women of the Medinan society, to be cultural emissaries, for example? This is a very unique cultural purpose that the women of the Ansar served. And this notion of going out into the villages, into the neighboring towns, and asking people, how do you weave your baskets? How do you knit your rugs? How do you bake your bread? What kind of music do you listen to? How do you dance? How do you... And they did this. And Medinan society was famous for its love of dance and song, and it's dignified and everything else.
Sure.
It's
not MTV videos.
No, I reckon... Actually, it's very fascinating you mention that. a group of wonderful young women were doing a stomp. I didn't know what it was, but they looked like they were stomping on the ground. And I walked over to them, and I said, what is that that you're doing? And one of the girls said, it's called stomp. Wow, how does it go? And so one of the girls shows it, and it's a very dignified dance. I said, mashallah, that's very good. So another girl raised her hand and said, I have a question. Is it okay to dance Islamically? Mm-hmm. And some of the girls, you know, they're like whispering to each other and needling each other and going, I told you dancing is haram. And do I get to contribute something here? And I told them something that they, not the orthodox kind of, well, legality and prohibition are interesting domains, and this is what legality is based upon, and this is what prohibition is based upon. That answer would be way too long, and especially way too unconstructive and boring to 12-year-old girls. I told them, I promise you, if you went around the entire globe, Ireland, China, Peru, everywhere, and everywhere in between. I promise you, every folkloric dance of every people, of every heritage, of every cultural background, is going to have some very unique common threads that are unmistakable to a cultural anthropologist. The modesty of the dress for both women and men, and the dignity of movements. Now, take a video camera. This would be an awesome documentary. Mm-hmm. Take a video camera of each of them. Take a video of each of these people. Come back and show it on widescreen, you know, really, really nice. Now, when you're doing this, take a small video player with you and show these wonderful, colorful people from around the globe, of course, of different cultural and religious backgrounds and so forth. Show them a little piece of, like you said, an MTV video. Show it to the Irish folks, and show it to the Chinese folks, and show it to the Peruvian folks, and show it to the Moroccan folks, and show it to the African folks. And I guarantee you they're going to ask, what in the world are these people doing? Are they okay? Are they sick? Are they practicing a satanic exorcism? What are these people involved in here? And so there's something fiddly, as we say in the Islamic lexicon. There's something very innate in the human being to desire to express herself through dance, through movement. It is the dignity of the dance.
Mm-hmm. At this point in time, we're just about at the end of our show, and I would like to leave at least a couple of minutes for our audience to catch our audience up on some of the work that you've been doing, and I understand that you are in the process now of writing a book, and in the 2 minutes that we have left, I'd like for you to share with our audience the work that you're doing with your book.
My book is an exploration into the legal, ethical, and spiritual dimensions of the implications of unique Quranic verses. And basically, the domain of implications is critical because it enables the English-speaking reader, and this is entirely in English, and you heard me throughout the show make references to the N and the F, or
yes,
the F and the N, and
definitely.
That's how it is. That's how it is. It's not the noon and the fa, and because the point is not so much for people to know the name of the letter in Arabic, but more importantly to enable the person through their lived experience and hopefully through their other tongues like Chinese or Sanskrit or Greek or Gaelic or what have you, for people to say, wow, actually we have the N and the F, for example, in our language, and it has a similar implication. And so this could be, my delusional hope is this could be an instrument for world peace and discussion. And
we should have the tagline, rebuilding the Tower of Babel. It was smashed, according to some traditions, and so now we're bringing, see, you have this, yes, I'm bringing it all back together.
Absolutely.
All the pieces are coming together.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, and when do we hope to have a manuscript completed, would you say?
I don't know. I'm assiduously working day and night on this. This has been an exploration of over 16 years, and I'm hoping that this is the time that this is given permission to see the light, you know. And it wasn't before, but it appears that now it is. And so honestly, I don't feel this is my book. It doesn't belong to me. Nothing. And this is something that's a very Islamic ethic. For example, we don't feel that something belongs to us unless God gives us permission to say, well, you're allowed to do this now, not yesterday, not next year, but you're allowed to do this now, or you're not allowed to do this now. So I just pray that God enables me with the physical strength and the health to be able to finish this very soon.
Well, I'm sure the audience joins me in wishing you the best in your writings. And we thank you very much for your time, opening up your doors as we, and it's quite appropriate because I think both of us have just finished our tea. So thank you again, Sheikh Abdullah Afni.
Thank you for listening to another episode of The Chai Pod with me, your host, Brother Dash. Remember, you can subscribe for free to The Chai Pod by going to iTunes, of course, keyword The Chai Pod, or you can visit our website, thechaipod.com, where you can also subscribe. Episodes are released on the 1st, and please tell your peeps about The Chai Pod. Thanks again. I'm Brother Dash.